Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
He's known as El Chapo, or Shorty, and he is, without a doubt, the most feared and the most dangerous drug lord in all of Mexico. Police turned up four more bodies, charred in the trunk of a burned-out car near the airport.
All we wanna be is El Chapo, and these hollow street niggas I know. All I wanna be is El Chapo, pull it out of man, slice your heart to him. All I wanna be is El Chapo, $3 billion in pesos. All I wanna be is El Chapo, and when I meet him, I'ma tell him bravo. I live a life so crazy, make me start smoking new poach. And you ain't coming in, I'ma serve you on the car porch. My pluggy coming in, I'm about to scoop it from the outpost. And ain't no room for nothing else but money in my condo. I'm ballin' like a bitch, you think my grandmother Griseldo. These suckers, they can't wait to double cross you like Diego. I'm whacking niggas, taxing niggas, similar to Pablo. I'm dick chain, touching every penny like I'm cash grab. Oh shit, mob hits, Lucky Luciano. Fresh boy rappers like the damn Gambinos. The shit that I done did has only been done by Latinos. Wow. Dope so good you think it came from El Chapo.
Guzman began his career in narcotics as an air traffic controller for drug flights over Mexico. By killing anyone who stood in his way, he rose quickly in the ranks, emerging as the leader of the Sinaloa cartel, one of the most violent of the Mexican drug gangs.
He was able to go to the biggest cocaine traffickers out of Colombia, purchase ton quantities of cocaine, and arrange for the cocaine to be transferred through
Colombia. Train just pushed down thanks to Amado. Best coke in the world going through your nostrils. The plug steady been the dope in by the polo. Several niggas heads off like El Loco. 100 bricks is nothing if you Jesus Elizondo. My big toy Emilio, I got it in the chokehold. Spent a half a million last year on Forgiatos. And no, not a Catholic, confessing is a no-no. So many bricks around and white, you know we got a slow roll. Coke so clean, every one brick is a combo. A little handgun in every pocket of my car. And it's a stack for a kilo if you get it in the jungle. All we wanna be is El Chapo, and these hollow street niggas I know. All I wanna be is El Chapo, pull it out of man, slice your heart to him. All I wanna be is El Chapo, $3 billion in pesos. All I wanna be is El Chapo, and when I meet him, I'ma tell him bravo.
Search for the man known as El Chapo.
This man makes a living mockery of America's war on drugs. He is Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, one of the world's richest men and Mexico's most wanted, with a $5 million U.S. government bounty on his head.
Chapo is the face. He is the guy who is currently at war against the government of Mexico, against law enforcement and military forces.
At war because El Chapo heads the ultra-violent, ultra-lucrative Sinaloa drug cartel. His exploits legendary.
Yeah, what it is, man. It's your man, King Eric, the Media Assassin, and you're now tuned in to episode 535 of Off the Cuff Radio. And this show is sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, Cleetwood and the Cot Pickers, Jesse Poutique, Core Financial, Screwball Radio. Got my host, T-Max with the facts in the building. What's good?
What, man, what it do? What it do? Another tremendous Thursday, Off the Cuff Radio. We are live and direct on the freshest frequency. Shout out to my co-host of Spirit, a lot of Sandman, Lady Chinchilla. And tonight's guest, he was so great having him the first time. This is an off-the-cuff record because we have him on 2 months later after we had him on the first time. And we got to give this man the proper interview in terms of his writing prowess, which is most powerfully poignant and profound. This man is the author with Ice-T and Spike, the book Split Decision. He has also written the book The Hunt for El Chapo and The Last Boss of Brighton, all New York Times bestsellers. And with his illustrious genius of intelligence, he's back with us tonight, worth more than 100 with his name indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, Canada's finest, Douglas Century. Welcome back, man.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir.
We can hear you. Welcome back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm on my Beats by Dre headphones, so I'm not sure if it's a clear signal, if you want me to just go to my actual phone. But thank you for, man, that intro. It's like, were you a pimp in a former life, man? That you talked me up like. That is like,
man.
That was a big intro. But yeah, like I had such a good time last time. We just really talked about hip hop, but.
Yeah, we got to get into the book this time. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about El Chapo, the book I wrote about El Chapo, but also what's going on with his son. And, you know, listen to that intro, that news, you know, that news. Some of it was true. Like, some
okay.
of it was true. But I want to get into some of the mythology. Like, Chapo really wasn't the most violent. He was the most clever. He was the guy that bribed the most officials, hundreds of millions in bribes, because he understood that killing is bad for business, like they say in the Godfather. So, I really want to get into El Chapo and who his sons are, and how they live their lives versus how he lived his life. So, I mean, hip hop, not just you know the game, but the track you just played. Who's that by?
Gucci Mane.
That was Gucci Mane.
Yeah. Yeah, man, these guys are like, I got the purest coke. El Chapo has, like, kind of replaced Escobar in hip-hop. That's, like,
well,
the ultimate of...
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
but when you think about it... Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, back in the days, Nas Escobar, everybody used to use that name, Escobar. And now El Chapo has become that brand, right? Here's a question for your listeners. Do you guys know what 701 means? All over Mexico, 701. You see these baseball hats. 701, pure 701. That's a code for El Chapo. And it's crazy. Yeah. Go on Amazon, you can buy 701 baseball hats. That's because when Forbes put him on their richest billionaires list, he was number 701. So everybody in Mexico knows that the number 701 means El Chapo was – I mean, you know, that's not nothing to be the 701st richest man in the world when you started off with shoeless
nothing.
In the streets, like with nothing. Right, exactly. So,
yeah.
You know, this guy's a legend for a reason. There's good and bad to it. He did some good things, but he did a lot of bad things. But, yeah, man, let's get into it. Let's chop it up about El Chapo and his sons.
Douglas, this is going to be dynamite. So, like you said, let's get it. When you look at El Chapo, like you said, when we look at the narcos of this, of course, Pablo Escobar, because we got to, and it doesn't even begin with him. It goes back way further than him. But Escobar, I mean, when we look at guys like George Young, the movie that Blow was based on.
Yep.
These were the guys. Actually, George Young was the one who was getting his coke from Escobar. A lot of people, because Young was the one who was actually the first to introduce blow, you know, cocaine to the United States, like Johnny Depp said in the movie in such a great role. Shout out to Johnny. He said, if you know, pretty much if you had weed or coke, more than likely 80-90% of it came from us, you know, him and his partner.
Yep.
You look at Pablo's life in terms of how he came up, him and, you know, Joaquin De La Lara Guzman, you know, of course, you're looking at two respective countries, well, actually, South America and Mexico. You're looking at El Chapo, Shorty, you know, coming up in, you know, in Sinaloa, and you're looking at Escobar coming up in Medellin, you know, Colombia. So this is pretty much, you see kind of the ascent where Escobar came up, you know, poor, became pretty much a strong man slash thief, you know, car theft. Shorty, you know, El Chapo came up as a you know, poor in the farm, you know, fought through a lot, abusive father, you know, and just like you said, you know, but arose, you know, through the ranks. Hip-hop is an intrinsically street culture because that's where it came from. And it's always been counterculture, which is why both of those two stand as titans in the in their title and the respect that they garner.
Sure.
It was all about
sure.
what they accomplished against all odds, coming from nothing, like so many black and brown people in this country, and then accomplishing so much in abundance.
Yep.
Times a
yep.
million. How do you what inspired you to get into that level of journalism and ultimately book writing about them, Doug?
Money. So, a deal came to me. The DE agent who went down there and really captured El Chapo wanted a book written about this story. I really didn't know that. I mean, I knew about drug trafficking, but I really had to immerse myself and learn the you know, the ins and outs of it, all the little details that you just described. But no, I had a book deal, and I met Andrew Hogan, who was a DE agent who went down there, lived in Mexico City, married a Mexican woman, and he had the Sinaloa desk in the U.S. Embassy in Mexico City. And El Chapo at that time was the most wanted man in the world. He'd been on the lam for 15 years. He was untouchable. And Drew kind of put together this massive investigation that helped catch him. And I was really impressed learning about how savvy El Chapo was with business. So let me back up a bit to what you said about Escobar. Just, you know, the average person is probably thinking drugs, drugs, drugs. First of all, let's be honest. It's the use of cocaine in New York, Chicago, Virginia, all over the United States, Miami, Canada, use of the cocaine, use of fentanyl, use of all these recreational drugs that made these guys billionaires. They're not pushing this shit on us. We want it, meaning, you know, we, the collective North American consumer, and they are the suppliers. What changed, what happened with Escobar, that era that we've all kind of seen, and in the Scarface movie when Pacino goes down there and meets with, you know, Escobar in Medellin, what changed was Reagan really cracked down on that route, that East Coast route that was up through a guy named Carlos Lederer, if you heard that name. Like, they had an island, basically, which was a cocaine transshipment island. You bring that, just look at the map. You guys, all you have to do is look at the geography. So Colombia, it was really simple to get it via boats, cigarette boats, whatever you want to call them, fast boats, up to the Bahamas, from the Bahamas into Miami, and then, man, Miami was it. Well, once Reagan, they really started to crack down on that route, the Colombians were very savvy, and they said, well, what's another route? Well, look at Mexico. Look at how long that border is with the United States. So they started to partner with the Mexicans to bring it overland. Chapo was the first guy to put a tunnel, like a very fucking, like his tunnel in 1989, he made a tunnel in Sonora State into Arizona. Literally James Bond shit. It's a pool table. If you went into this house in some this little town, it's a pool table that you press a button and it's hydraulic, goes up, go down to a tunnel. And that was the first narco tunnel they ever found. But the Colombians looked at the Mexicans and said, you should be our middlemen. You can transport it for us, right? Now, I'm not a huge fan of Narcos Mexico because some things are inaccurate, but the godfather of it all, they call it El Padrino. He was played by a really good actor, Diego Luna, Miguel Angel Felix Gallardo.
Yeah.
He was the guy that really, yeah, he really said to the Colombians, all right, we're moving your shit. We're your middlemen. But instead of just paying us, why don't you pay us in product? And if you think about it, the Mexican community of gangbangers and just hardcore gangsters in L.A., Phoenix, all up through California, all that Southwest, Texas, so they his innovation, he's called the godfather of it. That was the Guadalajara cartel, the original federation. And he was a former cop, by the way. He really was a cop. A lot of these guys were on the wrong side of the law. I mean, they were on the right side of the law, and they flipped. So he says to the Colombians, look, man, stop paying us to be your fucking mules. Pay us in product. And before you knew it, they were undercutting the Colombians' prices, and the Colombians were basically saying, All right, man. So that's how the Mexicans took over all of the cocaine, basically, that gets into the United States and Canada. The Colombians now have their main source of income, the Colombian cartels that exist. They send it over to Europe. You know, they cross the Atlantic. But so, you know, Anybody's curious, just look at an atlas. Look at a globe. It's all geography, man. So the border between the United States and Mexico is long. Even though Donald Trump said he wanted to build a wall, there's no fucking, I don't care how many long walls you want to build, you can tunnel under them, right? So, and as long as Americans and Canadians want to put shit up their nose or they want to numb their pain with opiates, these guys will supply it. So what El Padrino, and the Chapo at that point was kind of working with these guys, but he was an underling. There was one big cartel out of Guadalajara, and their innovation was basically, they told the Colombians, no, stop paying us in cash. We're going to take the product. And pretty soon the Colombians just said, we'll sell you the product. So Chapo's operation, I know all about in detail. His price point was to buy a key for $3,000 to $4,000. So $3,000 to $4,000 for pure, Mexicans never retail. They only sell it wholesale. So he would get $3,000 to $4,000 per key on the streets of LA or Phoenix. He could sell it for $25,000. Up in Vancouver, $35,000. And I mean, and they had the very willing workers. If you look at the Mexican American community, the size of it, you got gangs in LA, you got gangs in Texas, you got gangs in Arizona. So they had the workers, and pretty soon the Colombians just said, "Take it over." The reason, by the way, the Mexicans were prepared to do this, you guys are too young. But back in the days before dispensaries and legalized pot, I mean, Mexicans grew some strong weed. And it was called Acapulco Gold, I think, right? Sensimilia, you know, they showed that in Narcos Mexico. Rafael Caro Quintero, like, let's get the seeds out of that shit, man. They had strong weed, and they had the roots. They called them plazas. They had the roots to get it into the States. And all they did was say, okay, instead of smuggling marijuana, we're going to smuggle cocaine. And I think as marijuana became more and more legalized and more acceptable, I mean, here in Canada where I'm at, it's totally legal. I could go buy a joint, pre-rolls, gummies, anything I want. I could just go buy it in you know, right now, like, there's 10 shops just down the block, right? And it's the same in New York. It's the same in a lot of places. It's kind of hardly enforced that marijuana is illegal. But they just said, okay, let's take those same roots, and we'll move the cocaine. And El Chapo, I would say he was smarter than Escobar in terms of he really understood the workings of the business. He was trying to expand to places like Australia. I think Escobar, the money was so – Escobar in his era, the money was so free-flowing. And Escobar was so brazen with the shit, right? Like, you've seen the movies. He had a zoo. Yeah. He had, you know,
he
by
built
the time
his,
of
Doug, he built his own prison.
Yeah, he built his own prison. By the, and you know, the thing about El Chapo is he never had that era where he could really enjoy. He was a billionaire, but he was living in kind of interconnected safe houses in Culiacan. So this is where all the violence broke out recently. Culiacan is the capital of Sinaloa. Sinaloa, if you look at the map, is the it's kind of the narco state. Within Mexico is a very big country, so it's like Texas versus Virginia. It's like huge differences in geography. Sinaloa's got massive mountains, the Sierra Madre. It was very good country to grow marijuana, and once marijuana started to become legalized, they started to grow poppies and other crops that you can convert into drugs. And Culiacan is kind of the main city there. It's an affluent city. It's and the tourist destination there on the coast is Mazatlan. It's a perfect drug trafficking state. It's always been the heart of all the narco trafficking in Mexico, and that's where El Chapo comes from. That's where Mayo Zambada. That's where Gallardo. They all came from Sinaloa. Sinaloa is like the heart of it all. And I mean, why do they get into it? I don't know, man. Drugs are fascinating. Gucci Mane, you just played. Like, people have been fascinated in the illicit trade in substances, like with Capone and Meyer Lansky. It was
going back to Prohibition, absolutely.
Yeah, it was Prohibition. And as long as you're going to ban a substance that a lot of people want, somebody's going to supply it. You know, I mean, you guys know this as well as I do. Every drug dealer I've ever talked to, if you say to them, why are you selling this shit? Well, if I'm not going to sell it, somebody else's. You know, these crackheads
right.
in the corner going to buy it from somebody. It's a rationalization, but it is true. Somebody is going to bring that drugs in. So when they captured El Chapo with a massive operation, guess what? The flow of drugs, the amount of drugs, it didn't change one bit. Nope, it didn't.
No.
Like, somebody has replaced him, and I'll explain who that is. But, like, it's supply and demand. But American government always looks at it like, oh, you guys, you're supplying it. You're the pushers. It's the demand. The demand is here. We all know people that party with cocaine. We all know how sexy it is. And, I mean, you know, crack became kind of down market. But, like, cocaine
well,
was
yeah.
the rich people's drug, right? Cocaine
exactly.
was always kind of cool.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Absolutely.
Well,
because this,
well, remember,
yeah, because
Richard Pryor,
Richard Pryor
was the first guy. Richard Pryor was the first guy we ever heard
freebasing.
Of that blew himself up. He was freebasing. What
yeah.
he was doing was making homemade crack, essentially, right? He was just, you know, releasing the chemical thing to make it smokable. So, you know, Hollywood is filled with people using cocaine. Wall Street is filled with people using cocaine. The restaurant industry in New York and. You know, every chef I ever met, like these guys who work in restaurants, they all use coke. And I'm like, why? It's not the party. It's because if you're a chef in a restaurant or you're a whatever, it's like it's dead for 3 hours and then you got suddenly 500 customers. Well, they use that shit as a performance enhancing drug. So, I mean, you know, you can't point the finger at the Mexicans. You have to look point the finger at us. We're the people using this shit. We. Collectively, because I haven't touched that in a while. I don't know. I mean, cocaine is a dangerous substance to play around with because it makes you think you're omnipotent. It's the one drug I've ever experienced where you really think you are above, you are God, and then the problem is it lasts for 20 minutes and then you need more, right? So the people that dabble in that stuff, I feel sorry for them because there's no amount of money in the world that's going to keep you happy with your cocaine. It's just very, very, very pot. It's a to me, marijuana is a harmless drug. I would rather never seen two potheads swing at each other at a bar. Seen plenty of drunks do that, right? But the Mexicans, unlike the Colombian cartels, man, they diversify to everything: heroin, methamphetamine, fentanyl. They realize that the gringos, they look at it like this. The gringos are stupid enough to want this shit. We're going to supply them with anything they want. And they're kind of, guys like El Chapo are kind of folk heroes down there because, you know, it's not like they're selling it to the poor Mexican guys. The poor people in Mexico can't really afford this shit. So they're selling it to the rich Americans. And it's, I don't know, man. Like you said, brown and black people for years have looked at it like, you survived at all costs. You made it by your bootstraps. So, you know, I mean, the celebration of John Gotti or Al Capone or Escobar, I understand it. I understand it because it's an intoxicating idea. You were broke and now you're a billionaire. How did you do it? You sold that shit. I mean, it's as simple as that. Like, you made it. El Chapo is basically illiterate, even in Spanish. He went to school till he was 8 years old, and he became a billionaire. So you imagine how many poor people in Mexico look at that and say, well, if he could do it, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's a folk hero for a reason. Like, it's a dream for a lot of people to have the balls to actually go out there and say, I don't care. I'm going to break the rules. I'm going to break the law. But long-winded answer to tell you, man, this stuff is fascinating. There's a reason that so much hip-hop these days. Now, I'm not a big fan of hearing people say Percocet, Percocet, like, but, I mean, going back to my 90s era, you know, it was Nas Escobar. Biggie was talking about the 10 crack commandments. I mean, crack, cocaine, going back to White Lines, Melly Mel, cocaine has been around in hip-hop since the birth of hip-hop. Because in 79, 80, when hip-hop was starting, that was the party drug, man. So anyway, yeah, the Mexicans took it over from the Colombians, and El Chapo certainly supplanted Escobar as the most legendary name out there. You know, you can find so many hip-hop songs that reference him, and I'm amazed. It's like, do you really know what El Chapo was doing? But it's just, it's almost like a brand now, right? It's like Versace, El Chapo, just a name that sounds absolutely badass to a lot of people. I'll add one thing, man. The other thing that El Chapo did that I think a lot of people find amazing was he escaped twice. He broke out of prison. And I think, you know, the idea that you can break out of a maximum security prison, especially the way he did the second breakout in 2014 via a one-mile tunnel and a freaking, like, Steve McQueen motorcycle contraption, that shit was legendary. So, I mean, I heard the game saying, I'm El Chapo, motorcycle out the cell on you motherfuckers. You know, it's like that became legendary, man. Like, he made his own legend. Honestly, where is he now? Florence, Colorado, Supermax. He's doing 400 years, and as dudes used to say back in the day, they're gonna bury him under that prison, which is true. Like, he's not ever getting out of there. Because no amount of hundreds of millions is going to bribe the U.S. government. You'd have to actually bribe up to the president of the United States to get out of Florence Supermax. That's where John Gotti died. That's where a lot of these guys go. He's not getting out of there. Imagine his life now, 23-hour-a-day lockdown. I mean, he's doing solitary 23 hours a day. His rec time is 1 hour, and it's alone. So, you know, and he's not getting any messages to anybody. I don't know what his mentality is like, but, I mean, Amnesty International has called that kind of prison time a human rights violation. Like, I can't imagine doing solitary confinement for the rest of your life. You, by definition, you would kind of go crazy, right? So that's how he ended up, you know? But, yeah, so his sons are down there now, kind of. He's got many sons, but the four key ones are running the business as best they can. And, yeah, man. So anyway, we'll talk about El Chapo if you want, but if you want to talk about the situation on the ground in Mexico, I mean, Tom, whatever you guys want to talk about in terms of, there's so much. It's really a deep story because the U.S. government was complicit. We all know this, like the CIA, in terms of all those stories we've heard about the Contras in Nicaragua, the CIA and the U.S. government in introducing crack to the American cities. It's not like the Mexicans and the Colombians forced this on anybody. This was a, you know, I don't want to bite into the conspiracy theories, but Rick Ross and those guys in L.A., they've talked about it. They dealt with the U.S. government. They dealt with CIA guys. That's how they got their coke.
Yeah, man, he lived a life like it could be like a movie, man. I mean, they had to pretty much do it in a way where they had to do the series because, you know, the story is so complex.
Yep. Yep, you know, Mexico is a really poor country. So you got to think about what the average person makes per hour, you know. They're hungrier, so these guys are really – you know, if you want to be a narco down there, and plus a friend of mine who's a Mexican journalist covering this stuff said, you know that 99.9% of homicides in Mexico, of Mexicans, if you kill a tourist, it'll be investigated. But then the vast majority of homicides in Mexico don't even get investigated. Like, they're never solved. So life is super cheap. You rip off the wrong guy in a place like Culiacan or Cancun, man, you get whacked and that's the end of it. Like, you're just a body. So, yeah, man, it's a violent world. But what Escobar was in the 80s, now it's, you know, I mean, and it seems like people are fascinated. Like, the amount of narco shows I see, like, there's Narcos Mexico, but there's also El Chapo movies and documentaries. People seem really intrigued by this stuff. I guess it's the fast money. I mean, what do you guys think? Like, what is the appeal of narco culture to those of us who really aren't there in Mexico?
I think it ties into the Scarface. People want their energy back. Like, Scarface was a reflection of the fast money, the drug dealer looking real fly, and I think Narcos was a reflection of that era that they wanted to emphasize back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, you could make it, and you could come from nothing, right? And before you know it. So I'll tell you a funny story about El Chapo. It's in the book, Hunting El Chapo. He had all this money, but he was smart enough, because by then, he's in his 50s. What he did is, when he did leave his little, like, enclave of safe houses connected by tunnels, he had a Volkswagen Jetta. And you're going to go, well, fuck that. What's a Volkswagen Jetta? He had level 4 body armor. The windows were bulletproof. So it just looked like a Jetta, but it was a very secure car. That was his vehicle. The sons of his, they had Bugattis, McLarens. They had them built. And he used to, in the messaging intercepts that the DA, he would ball them out. I'm like, what the fuck? What's with the Bugattis? Like, that's just wrong. You're just drawing attention to yourself. Like, his sons love to floss that shit. Because they weren't hungry. Like the younger generation are called narco juniors. They were kind of born into it. They weren't farmers and broke. They were born with their dads already multimillionaires, and they just take it for granted. So you can find videos on YouTube of not El Chapo's son, but it was El Chapo's nephew. He got into some shit in a nightclub in Sinaloa. He just starts blasting off his Colt into the ceiling. He never got arrested. Nobody touched him. It's like we're untouchable, you know? So the sons wanted to floss their wealth, and they had all the fly stuff, all the cars. They were dumb, though, like this guy that was arrested, Ovidio. They call him a Baton, which means mouse, because he kind of looks like a mouse. Big ears and black eyes. Yeah, I mean, they were on social media posting stuff. Like, dude, you cannot be a high-profile gangster. I'm sorry, man. You can't be on social media. If you're really making money from that life, you should not be posting about it. And you should really not. So El Chapo would tell his sons, you know, can't you just drive around in a Honda? No, they had to. I forget their cars, man. They had some. They wanted to, yeah. And guess what? That draws heat. And the minute you draw heat, especially from the U.S. authorities, I mean, you're in a target, man. You are a feather in the cap of some DEA, FBI, ATF. I mean, I think El Chapo had a $10 million warrant for his arrest. It's not just that someone wants them. I mean, these guys, now the law enforcement, to them, that's like, if I catch him, think of the press conference. Think of the... I mean, to law enforcement, it's all about PR. They want to catch that big bad guy, right?
Dude,
but
I mean, remember when they caught Escobar, and the dude was posing with his gun, I think his watch and everything, the gold bars, the whole shebang a bang. They posed with Escobar.
Yeah, Escobar, they literally, they literally executed him, right? They literally shot him in the head. I mean, the dark secret of this shit is that. They killed him because they knew if they extradited Escobar to the United States, he would tell the stories of what he really knew, which was the amount of interaction he had with the CIA and the government.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, look, the U.S. government has been intimately involved in allowing the flow of drugs, especially to the inner cities. I mean, there's been a lot of stories about this. Crack wasn't just a phenomenon happened.
No, it's Freeway Ricky. You know, you had the Iran-Contra affair. You know, the money that was funded down in El Salvador with that conflict down there, the Sandinistas. You know, going back to the...
When I said Rick Ross, I was mentioning, I didn't mean the rapper Rick Ross. I meant
Ricky
Ross.
Yeah, the actual Ricky Ross. Yeah, we interviewed him. Shout out to Ricky.
He has talked about it, like who he dealt with from the government, right? I mean, they were, look, man, we will get you the cocaine, and then we will get those guys down there the guns. So, I mean, it's in my mind, I hate to say this, it's so hypocritical. The U.S. government, like, oh, we got a war on drugs. But meanwhile, they're complicit in this shit. There never was a war on drugs. Like, how do you go to war with a substance, man? I have a war with cocaine.
I mean, the war we fought and lost against the opponent that based on. I mean, the thing is this: there's always, like you said, with all this great history you're giving us, it is. Whenever you have an outlawed substance, there's going to inevitably become a black market because of demand for it, because it's outlawed. Whether it be certain guns, whether it be drugs, whether it's, like we said earlier, prohibition, the black market is going to rise because the demand never stops.
Absolutely.
Laws a lot of times are only a paper tiger that is thrown into the shredder when you're dealing with the insatiable and, you know, infinite demand for it. When we look at guys going back today, because if we even take it further, we look at what happened with Panama, with Manuel Noriega. You know,
yep.
He was actually the School of Americas, you know, and pretty much we gave him a lot of the, teachings here. You know, how he went back to Panama then in 1989, then we decided, well, we kind of had enough of him. You know, and then,
well,
you
and
know,
by the way, you guys are not New York cats, but like, my first book was called Street Kingdom. I was hanging out with these guys, like some serious gangsters in Brooklyn, and they were Panamanian.
Right.
They were, you know, you'd think they were Jamaican the way they talk, but they were Panamanian. And the thing about it is Panama borders on Colombia. Back in the, I think in the early 1900s, Panama was part of Colombia. So in New York, at least, the Panamanians were strong. They're like Dominicans. They were getting pure kilos of cocaine. They had the strongest guy on the street in New York or L.A., but he's the guy that's getting the shit that's uncut. Like, he's not the middleman. He's bringing it in pure. So the Panamanians, and, yeah, who was top of that food chain? You just named him, Manuel Noriega. And he was profiting from that. So, it gets very political, man. Like, I got a friend who's...
Yeah, they're not really doing it to save lives. They're doing it to cover their tracks. That's all that's
of course.
All about.
And let's be honest, man. Let's go back. George W. Bush. Bush
right.
Jr. Oh, I remember
the head of the
guy. No, that was the dad. But the son,
right.
When he's running for president, you know, he had some problems, you know. Back in the day, they said, oh, he had a cocaine problem. You know, you got Biden's son, Hunter Biden, with the I went to Princeton University. I'm not trying to brag or anything. When I was at Princeton, there were some fucking guys. Maybe I shouldn't say this story out loud, but I think they're all fine now. I didn't know anything.
Just don't say no names.
Yeah, but, I mean, there was this scandal that they hushed
right.
it up. Just going to tell you how
okay.
high it goes. So you imagine like Harvard, Princeton, Yale. These are like – so I didn't know anything about cocaine. I mean, I was smoking some pot and some hash, but I didn't know anything about – I'd never touched cocaine. And there was a scandal of some students on campus who were selling cocaine. And they were dumb enough that they were taking checks. They were taking personal checks for their cocaine, so they got busted. And then when I heard about it, it was like one was the son of the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Another one was the son of some massive guy in government in Washington. You know what? It all got covered up. Like, we heard about it on campus, and it was like they never got arrested. They never got expelled. But I was like, well, first of all, I thought, how fucking stupid are you that you're selling drugs and taking personal checks? Like, drugs, by definition, drugs is a cash business, bro. But yeah, like cocaine. And then once I moved to New York City, the biggest cokeheads I ever met were these big ball and white guys on Wall Street, man. Like
yeah.
Wall Street opens at what, 5 in the morning? These guys are coked the fuck up.
Yeah, they gotta stay up.
Yeah, like, again, like the chefs I mentioned in the restaurant, they're not being coked up to party, but, you know, Wolf of Wall Street, all that stuff, they're getting coked up to be the most aggressive, hyper motherfucker out there, right? So Yeah,
right.
I mean, the hypocrisy of how we view drugs, we view it as if it's almost like poor people, inner city people who are using this stuff, and it's, you know, it's being pushed on us. Oh, my God. It goes to the very top of all our is suffused with cocaine, but now I think the big crisis is, you know, opiates, you know, the fentanyl.
Yeah,
and
fentanyl.
People want to numb their... You know, I was, because, so this kid they arrested, Ovidio, they were marketing him, at least in the press release, as the big fentanyl kingpin. And I don't know. I've never seen fentanyl. I don't know. I mean, I know it's like heroin, but 100 times stronger. And then I was, like, looking up who OD'd from massive amounts of ODs, and I was like, Tom Petty, the rock star. Prince, who was a Jehovah's Witness, he never did drugs. He was on painkillers, and they said, you know what, he bought some, you know, off-brand, you know, painkillers, and they had fentanyl, and he OD'd. So, I mean, our OD crisis, you know, our addiction and our pain crisis in the United States is touching on, like, every level of society, celebrities, the common people. I mean, you know, I was wondering, like, when did this opioid crisis hit? And I saw this, I think it was 60 Minutes or somebody. You know, it's like all these kids, their parents have legit, you know, OxyContin prescriptions. So they sneak a few, just like I did as a kid. I would steal a little booze from my parents' liquor cabinet. They're stealing a few pills. Pretty soon their parents' supply runs out and they start looking for a guy on the street. Well, this fentanyl is like 100 times stronger than they want. And pretty soon, boom, you know, you fall asleep and you don't wake up. So, I mean,
right.
the crisis that created these guys, we made El Chapo a billionaire. Americans,
absolutely.
Canadians, you know, we made Escobar. They're not pushing that shit on us. We're demanding it, right?
Right. And you know, Doug, because we – man, because this is jewels right here. When you look at it in terms of – this intertwines so much in terms of the pharmaceutical market, because you're going to have a lot of people who are critical of the pharmaceutical market because they say there's no money in people getting well, but there is hella money in people getting sick, and that's why
yep.
they're more concentrated on keeping people medicated rather than coming up with the cures. And that's where we start having these situations where you're having sometimes doctors prescribing drugs when people really don't need it. But obviously, I think there have been scandals where they said the doctors are getting kickbacks off of it for prescriptions.
My ex-wife worked in like for Roche Pharmaceuticals. These reps come to the doctors and they say, hey, it's not really kickbacks, but they get a kind of a commission, more or less. Oh,
gotcha.
Prescribe the OxyContin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's. I mean, you're right. It is a kickback, but it has a kind of technical name. You're getting a commission for, and they're pushing.
For a
reason,
right.
Why did you say that? Yeah, yeah. Purdue Pharma, push the OxyContin, push this shit. Hillbilly heroin, they called it for a while, right? But,
right.
You know, I mean, I love talking about these narcos from South America, from Latin America, but I also always say, dude, we're the reason they're fucking rich. Man, like
yeah.
they didn't push this shit on us. I'm gonna tell you one funny story, right? So this El Chapo, I didn't know anything about Mexican narcos, but I met this guy that 7 years of his life he spent. So I'm now digesting this stuff, and I'm just sitting at a pub, like in Canada actually, and I knew by then that El Chapo had the Sinaloa cartel had the entire of Canada on lock because he could get all his pure cocaine at $35,000 a key into Vancouver. And then, you know, like I said, the Mexicans don't retail. So they use the bikers, Health Angels, Iranian gangs. All they want to do is just sell it wholesale and then let other people retail it. So I'm sitting at this pub, got my laptop out. Some guys just chatting me, you know, what are you doing? I'm saying, I'm working on this book about El Chapo. And, oh, yeah, okay. Then, yeah, I'd have heard of him. Yeah, did you know that all the cocaine in Canada is like coming from Sinaloa? Yeah, yeah. And then the guy says to me, by the way, you need some? Like, you want to get high? And I was like, no, dude, I'm writing about it. I don't want to snort any. But like the guy that I was just telling it was like selling it. And I was like, wow, that's very meta. Like, it's every fucking where, man. Like, we're surrounded by illicit substances, and I guess we're fascinated by the going back to Al Capone and Prohibition up through John Gotti. I mean, you guys are more of a hip hop, like, kind of, you know, that's more your theme. And like, I'm always amazed, you know, these guys that call themselves Noriega, Capone, Nas Escobar. Yeah. It's like the mythology of these non-African-American gangsters, Italians. I'm like, why are you Gotti? Why are you Irv Gotti? It's like, well,
I did. But that was, but that was always a thing, because it was always an outlaw culture. Because when you look at the mafia, I mean, going back, you know, which was, you know, when it was actually uncovered, what was that incident? I'm trying to think of it. When it was actually the Appalachia. Thank you. The 1957, the Appalachia incident, where they found all those mafia guys and they ran, and that was the first time.
I'm very impressed. Not you, Tom. You know your history.
Yes.
That's when they really had to admit they're one of the mafia. Yeah.
I mean, that's when you found out in full. Yeah, like John Carlo, you know, like you know, the five families, you know, where you had the Lucchese's, you know, the Gambinos, the Bananos, you know, I mean, all those guys. I mean, you know, Capone was in the 30s, and then, I mean, you had guys that came out, you know, then you had guys like Dutch Schultz, you know, of course, Bumpy Johnson, who was not necessarily, you know, who was not in the Italian mafia, obviously, but he was the one that fought them off. You know, the movie Hoodlum, shout to Lawrence Fishburne, played it great as him.
Yeah.
You know,
the Appalachian, it was a guy named Joe Barbara. Vito Genovese took over the Genovese family from Frank Lucello, and he called a conference. And this guy named Joe Barbara in upstate New York, and they all came up there. It's in the movie Analyze This. It's all kinds of movie show, and they were all busted. Like, I mean, you know, how many guys are in upstate New York is the redneck. It's like the deep south of New York State. Like, and you got all these guys in silk suits and like really fancy Italian loafers running from the cops. That was because J. Edgar Hoover had said for years, there is no mafia. There is no mafia.
Right,
you know why?
Right.
Because J. Edgar Hoover was a cross-dressing, closeted gay man, and the mob had all kinds of photos, and so he wouldn't say. But when that happened in 1957, even he had to say, "Yeah, there is an organized crime syndicate of families across the United States." But he had denied it for years and years and years. But you know what? I want to ask you two guys, because you're African American. It's like, not just Bumpy Johnson, Nikki Barnes. Like, when I moved to New York and my wife was African American, she would say, "Yeah, we used to stay in the Bronx. Word is bond, like Nikki Barnes." Like, Nikki Barnes was kind of like a big name in the Bronx, but hip hop never really embraced Bumpy Johnson, Nikki Barnes, Frank Lucas the way they embraced. I always wondered, like, why were the real top-notch black mafia gangsters, like, they were never celebrated in hip-hop the way that Latino gangsters or Italian gangsters were?
Really think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, why did no rapper ever call themselves Nikki Barnes? No rapper ever called themselves Bumpy Johnson? Well, Bumpy Knuckles. You know, that was...
I think I know what it is. Because there's a lot of checks and balances that they probably got to go through, especially when they're from that area and they're from that town.
Oh,
you gotta,
good point. Yeah.
They don't want to go through those shakedowns because, see, you can claim you Escobar because, you know, Escobar's all the way in Mexico. But
right.
You don't
want
to claim Bumpy. You got to check in
Columbia,
your backyard and play the
fee. Eric, that's a good point because, I mean, Big Meech, like, you know, he became, but didn't Freeway Ricky Ross kind of check Rick Ross from Miami and say, "Look, man, you're using my name." Like, yeah. Like, yeah,
well,
once you
right.
That's a good point. You're taking an ethnicity that's not yours, so they're not even going to fuck with you because they're like, man, whatever. You're just bigging me up, right?
And it's also, too, what's in a name because it carries so much weight. Now, Nicky Barnes still has that stigma about him because Nicky ratted. And that has always been an issue of consternation in terms of Harlem. That's always been an issue with Nicky when the commission, when all that stuff came down, and ultimately he told. When you're dealing with Bumpy Johnson.
So did Alpo, like, you know, Alberto Martinez.
Alpo,
yeah,
but the thing difference. Yeah, what a great segue. When we talk about guys like Alpo, now Alpo was real. Anybody in Harlem will tell you that Alpo Martinez was for real. Now, did he tell? Absolutely. But that dude also laid down 14 people. So there was a reason why.
Oh, yeah, dude. I almost got shot by Alpo's gunman. Oh, man. I'm going all over the map. Go ahead.
Tell the story.
Like about 1993-ish, Video Music Box, if you guys – before there was really a lot of really raunchy hip-hop.
Shout out Ralph McDaniels, absolutely.
Yeah, Ralph McDaniels. And there was a guy, Crazy Sam, who had a manslaughter conviction. Crazy Sam and I'm with these kind of gangsters from Brooklyn, and Crazy Sam, there's a Circle Line is a boat in New York City, which kind of circles. It's a tourist boat, but you can rent it out. So it's rented out by Video Music Box for a kind of Luke-style booty dancer show. So I'm with some guys that are, you know, tough guys from Brooklyn, and they're like, I said, well, why are we on this cruise? He goes, well, at around midnight, some girls are going to come out and thong. He's like, we got to, like, protect the girls from all these horny motherfuckers. And by the way, I'm the only white guy on the boat except the captain. So I'm on this boat, and like at some point, I don't remember what happened, but, and if you can believe this, I know you're going to say, no, you're making this up. Love Bug Starsky was the DJ. Like he was playing the music. It was great music. The girls came out, they danced, whatever the song was at that point, Rump Shaker, whatever. And then guns got pulled. And then the guy I was with, K1, he knocked this motherfucker out. And I didn't realize he knocked out Alpo's main gunman, a guy named Lucky Luck. And, I mean, everybody got flat. Everybody just ducked. And I'm like, because when you're on a boat, there's nowhere to run, right? You're just like, what the fuck? And it almost ended up in a shootout when we docked the boat. And then I asked, like, what the fuck happened? And he goes, this is literally if you – DJ Vlad did an interview with Melly Mel, and he goes, man, Melly Mel was saying, we started the shout-out because we had gangsters behind us saying, you better shout me out or you're dead. So that's what happened on this cruise, right? This was not in the 70s. This was in 1993, 1994. Alpo and whoever he was with, they were mad that they weren't getting enough shout-outs, so they pulled out straps. And I was like, dude, is it really that important to you? But yeah, it got crazy. Like, that's drug dealers want recognition for their stature. I've noticed that.
Yeah.
Like, they want you to say, yeah, you're running shit. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, Alpo almost caused me to, yeah, I was stupid enough to not lie down on the ground because I was like, what's going on? Like a deer in the headlights. I didn't realize if you're from the hood, you know to lie down immediately when you see a gun. But I was from Canada, so I was like, "What's happening, guys?" But yeah, it was awesome.
Look, you're from Canada, but your bacon didn't get cooked. That's a good thing.
That's
how a lot of rappers would do it. I think Too Short, if my history is right, from the Bay Area, Too Short, that's how he would get on back in the day when he was slinging his tapes out of trunk. He would shout out a lot of the local dealers on his records, and that's how he started moving. When you're dealing with a fact of there's, depending on your ego and the level of where you're at in the game, because we're going to get back to Chapo's kids and nephews, because this ties right into where I'm going with it. There's always a certain celebrity that you want because you want that respect. And even because of the fact of you have to stay anonymous, low-key, this is the utmost imperative in such a dangerous business that it's so profoundly with peril, you still want your name resonating, even if you're that shadowy, mythical figure. So, yeah, that's always that thing. When you look at drugs coming into this country, Doug, the fact is we gave them something back, hip-hop, because you see hip-hop as the biggest export the United States has. So when you're seeing now all of these kids growing up under these kingpin, these drug lords' families, and they're already got money, these motherfuckers are getting the shit that the rappers are talking about and don't have to take out a loan to get it. Like, and they want to floss. Their thing is, we want to be like the rappers in the United States showing off money. And guess what? We actually got it to show it off.
You know, dude, that's a great – well, you guys have raised two great points. One is that, and the second is what Eric said, which was that if you really shout out the drug dealers, the black drug dealers that we're dealing with, you might get extorted or you might get stepped to, right? Because you're saying my name? What the fuck are you talking about, man? It's a little different in Mexico because the culture – you know, I mean, I don't know if you guys know this, narco corridos. So corridos, they kind
of
sound.
Yeah, the music,
sure,
right? Yeah, the music.
Yeah, they would sound. I just posted something on Instagram. Like it probably sounds corny to you guys. It's like waltz music. It's got accordions and tubas, but this is the gangster rap, right? And and drug dealers in Mexico will actually pay a guy $10,000, put my name in that song. Guys have been murdered on stage for disrespecting another guy. So that's the gangster rap of Mexico. It's very, very hardcore. If you don't know Spanish, you don't know what they're talking about. But, yeah, it's the same thing. It's like you're bigging up my legend. You're telling my story. You're putting me there on wax or, you know, on MP3 or, you know, whatever, iTunes. Being immortalized is important to drug dealers usually. They want that recognition that I did it because, I mean, the only Italian-American gangster I can think of that really lived in the shadows and died in his bed is Carlo Gambino. Now, his name is well-known, but, like, he lived quietly in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. He didn't dress flashy. Like, the truth is, if you want to survive as a gangster, you got to be low-key with that shit, man. Like, El Chapo drove around in a Jetta. His downfall was he wanted a movie made of his life. Like, if he had stayed in those impenetrable mountains and he had lookouts, I don't know Spanish that well. I dated some Spanish girls, but, like, all over Sinaloa, Culiacan, they have guys called halcones, which are hawks, lookouts, every corner. So the minute the military or anybody is moved, El Chapo knew that way before they made their moves, right? So he could flee. And he's fleeing up into some mountains that are like the most backwoods of West Virginia or the most backwoods of Colorado. Like, and nobody can catch her. Yeah. But El Chapo's downfall was he wanted his story told. He wanted it. Yeah, it's narcissism. It's like ego, you know. That's the downfall. A lot of these gangsters, the downfall is you got the money, but you want the recognition, right? You want the ego. You want the validation.
Yeah, and that's what you're talking. Yeah. And not to cut you off, because I want to say this while I was on my mind, but you think, when you talk about the narco ballads, one comes to mind about Javier Rojas, I believe, who was killed years ago in 2015.
Yep.
He was murdered. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. You know, so the narco corrido world, for your listeners, corrido is just a ballad. So these are ballads about narcotics. The first one is they're a great group out of, they're called Los Tigres del Norte, the Tigers of the North. And they had a really great song, I think it's even the 70s, called Contraband and Betrayal. And it's about the weed days, right? But there's a big tradition of narco songs in Mexico. And, yeah, if you sing the song about a rival crew, I mean, honestly, this is the gangster rap of Mexico, but it's even more hardcore. You will just get shot on stage. It happened a few times. So you got to be real careful. And I forget if I saw it on HBO or maybe Netflix, but yeah, there's guys now, like, it's such a status. You will pay a guy $10,000. Like, there's a, A big position in the narco world is a pilot, right? If you know how to fly a Cessna, little plane, because that's your a pilot.
Barry
might
Seal.
Come to
we think about Barry Seal.
Yep, exactly. So
and,
a young
and of
pilot
course John
might,
Roberts.
Might a young pilot might come to a narco corrido artist and say, "Here's 10,000 or here's 20,000. What do you want? Write a song about me, or at least put me in the song." So, yeah, narco corridos are gangster rap is in Mexico. It's just a slightly different culture. And I got to tell you something, too. The way that the feds, I don't know if all your listeners know this, but the feds look at Instagram and Twitter. They, as far as, I mean, that's, who was the young guy that got killed in Roscoe's Chicken in L.A.?
TNB Rock.
2 months ago. Yeah.
TNB Rock.
I mean, they're monitoring that shit. The feds are. They're monitoring social media. Well, the same
right.
way the American feds are monitoring these narco corridos, because if you really understand Spanish, and they have some Spanish Mexican-American agents.
Right.
They kind of tell you who's the new power. And so El Chapo is not the power right now in Mexico. It's a guy named Mencho.
El Mencho,
you heard him. Yeah, he's out of, watch me flex my Spanish right now, Nueva Generación de Jalisco, the new generation of Jalisco.
Jalisco cartel?
Yeah, the new generation of Jalisco is the power in Mexico right now. And the man, he's got a $30 million bounty on his head. I think there's only a couple of photos of him. He's way replaced El Chapo. We're talking about this shit, but I had to learn this. Guadalajara is a big city in Mexico. There's Mexico City and there's Guadalajara. Guadalajara is
right.
a big city. And this new cartel, the new generation of Guadalajara, El Mencho is the power. He's 56 years old. He's the most wanted man, probably. They're the most powerful cartel. And if you really think about it, it's like kind of throwback, because the original cartel, if you saw Narcos Mexico, was Miguel Ángel Félix Gallardo and this guy, Guerrero Palma, all kinds of guys. They were in Guadalajara. That's a fairly big city of several million people. It's a beautiful city. And Jalisco is a state in Mexico. That's the tequila producing state. So he's the power in Mexico right now, this guy Mencho. But, like, he doesn't have the name recognition. Nobody's making rap songs about Mencho right now, the way El Chapo.
Probably for good reason. But the thing is with Mencho, I've heard Mencho is serious with it. But when you talk about it, Doug, in terms of the music aspect of it, in terms of singing the ballads about it, because, you know, when you're looking at Mexican culture, you know, which is, you know, pretty much right along the lines of country music, you know, it's just a different version, but a different language, different sound, but it's all the same, where country music in this country would sing about the outlaws. You know, Mexico
yep.
has the ballads about the, yeah, because that's just, you know, the people come from a common struggle. Now, the United States is not as necessarily, unless you're allowed to speak on somebody, we're just saying this for journalistic purposes on Off the Cuff. We shade nobody. Our show is about the most historical context. We look at what happened with FBG Duck doing the song Dead Bitches. And he was just,
yep.
he was shitting on his enemies and
yep.
their homies
yep.
that got shot. And what happened to Duck?
Yep.
Duck got guy. And it's like,
yep.
you know,
yep.
I mean,
whole part
you,
is,
you
they
gotta
don't
be,
even
well,
scream. They doing a diss video in the next hour.
They on it.
Well, you know, Eric and Tom, I don't know, even know how old you guys are, but I'm old enough to remember when 50 Cent, I'm in New York, I'm really nib, 50 Cent is a nobody. Nobody's heard of him, but he puts out this song, How to Rob. And,
yeah,
and
MTV soundtrack, 1999.
Yeah. Fuck, man, people were heated because he was at Rob. I drove ODB's ass, but nobody's broke as fuck. Dude, like, people take some of these things in music really seriously. You disrespected
oh, yeah.
me. You said this, you know what? So, yeah, like in Mexico, there is a kind of form of gangster rap in Mexico. I forget the name of it now. It's but, you know, the cultures are very, very different. Like you said, I mean, Americans don't want to hear this, but I will speak truth to power. Dude, all of that cowboy redneck culture comes from Mexico. The cowboy, the all those words, lasso, a lasso, is a road. You know what rodeo means? A rodeo? Rodeo means a circle in Spanish. All of it came from the Mexican culture, even those cowboy hats, like everything that those redneck motherfuckers, who I don't really like, it's all Mexican. They took this, and you want to know the funniest one I learned?
What's that?
The word for a cowboy, or even for jeans, if you want to say jeans in Spanish, it's vaquero, or a cowboy is vaquero. You ever heard like a cowboy movie where they go, yo, buckaroo? Buckaroo
right.
is vaquero. they couldn't pronounce it, so they took vaquero. A vaca is a cow. So, yo,
right.
cowboy. And they took. So all of the cowboy culture, all that redneck culture, really, really, really comes from Mexico. The riding the horses, the hats, those cowboy hats, they all came from Spain. So, yeah, I mean, Mexican culture is really proud. One thing I have to know, I mean, I have to impress this on your listeners, getting to know a few of these. Mexican culture is a proud fucking culture.
Yes,
I mean,
they are.
Listen, man.
Yes, they are.
Listen,
shout
man,
out to our Brown Brothers.
They
are.
Yeah, but they don't back down from shit. And when I
no,
wrote,
they don't.
Okay, so random transition. Ice and Spike.
Okay.
Spike did 35 to life. He's doing time in Northern. So in California, Spike is Ice-T's partner in crime. He's doing time. Now, Spike is a rolling 30s grip, born and raised. He's in, you know, they got, well, as you say, in prison in California, cars, right? You're with a,
yeah.
You're with the crip.
What gang
right?
you're with.
What gang you're with, and it doesn't matter if you're a player, once you're in prison, you're with that car. And Spike told me, dude, I don't care where you are in California.
If it's a black
no
gang, you're with the blacks.
Exactly, but he said there is no organization like the Mexicans. In the Norteño,
none at all.
He said, like,
Northern California,
so Spike,
right.
If you read our book, Split Decision, he talks about it, he says, if a race thing pops off in Calipatria prison, he said, I don't care if you're a, you know, there might be some black dudes from 30s and they might, I don't really want. He said, if there are, it might be a 50-year-old guy reading his Bible and he doesn't look like shit. But when the racial war pops off, he's with the business. And he said, they have a military discipline. And they divided California between Norteños and Sureños.
And Sureños.
Northerners.
Southern
and
California,
yeah.
Northern.
And, you know, and it's partly because the Crips and Bloods and all the different sets are divided. But Spike told me, listen, man, the Hispanics in every prison I was in, they have a military structure. And they are so disciplined with this shit. So, yeah, that's part of it. Like, the Mexican culture is really proud. It's really, they don't like to take a backseat to anybody, man. I mean.
Oh, no. I mean, but you know, Dale, but you're absolutely right. Matter of fact, when you think about the movie American Me years ago with Edward James Olmos, you know, that was loosely based on how, you know, the Mexican mafia started. And that scene, you know, where the dude got raped in the prison, you know, and
that
ooh, the Mexican mafia, five consultants from that film were killed, and they had to put Olmos under witness protection for a while because there were legitimate death threats against him, against his life,
Mexican crime world, they do not play. But, you know, like, of all the hip-hop guys I know well, it's, you know, Ice-T. Ice-T has mad respect for Kid Frost. Henji, one of his, like, he's actually Guatemalan, but, like, I said, you know, if you're in L.A., I mean, if you got to deal with the Latino community, and, like, I mean, they were very influential. I mean, getting off track here, but, like, the Puerto Rican influence in hip-hop in New York was huge. Not just the dancers, but there were DJs. Like, the Latin impact, you know, Fat Joe talked about it a bit, but the Latin impact in hip-hop has been massive. But certainly in L.A., there were very early guys in hip-hop in L.A. who were from the Mexican-American culture. And it's the cholo, like you said, the cholo gangbanging culture. But, like, when you see Snoop and Dre driving around in those 6'4 Impalas on hydraulics, they didn't invent that shit. That was Mexican shit back in the 50s, man. The Mexicans were into real, I mean, I researched this. Mexicans.
Yeah, those cars were called bombers. They were called bombers back in the day.
Yeah, so the cholos, like, it was a Mexican culture back in the day to have a really cool car that you drove really slow to impress the girls, and you would kind of go. So that really had a big impact on hip-hop that hasn't really been appreciated, I think, fully. But, yeah, like, Mexican culture is really proud. Look at Canelo Alvarez. Like, I mean, these guys, when he fights, these Mexicans do not think they are subservient to anyone.
No.
So do you guys have questions? Like, I mean, the kids, so there's a generation in Mexico and in America called Narco Juniors. They're the kind of yuppie, they're the rich kids who were born into this stuff. But, I mean, whatever you guys want to know about this stuff, I mean, unfortunately, for better or worse, I've immersed myself in so many different things, and I talk too much. What do you guys really want to, like, what's most interesting to you about the violence in Mexico or the narco culture? Like, what do you think is, what's most newsworthy to you?
I think the violence in it, but when you look at so many people that have been involved, like, you even got the girls that are going nuts with it in terms of, like, that chick some years ago who was, like, a model, and she got killed. You know what I'm saying? But mm-hmm. And then you had that 16-year-old who was a hitman for one of those cartels. And he was, you know, killed. I mean, they actually got a picture of him with his head blown off holding the rifle.
Yep.
One thing about it when we look at Mexico, when you look at people wonder how the violence there is what it is, but it's like this. When you're coming from the bottom, like a lot of those people have, there's no other way to motherfucking fight your way out of it. And not only fight your way out, but with savage barbarity, tenacity, unwavering violence, and merciless, you know, punishment,
yep.
How you are going to maintain that spot. And you not only wipe out opposition, you crush your enemy totally.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And when you're talking about the bounties, like El Mencho got a $30 million on his head, King, Doug, I love my family. $30 million is not enough for me to even, if I had information, to turn that guy in.
Yeah,
your whole,
true.
Man, I mean, you talking about, see, the thing is, I tell everybody, when you're talking about the violence in the United States stateside, you know, it's violent when you get on the wrong side of those gangs and everything. But Mexico will wipe out. You get on the wrong side of those cartels, nobody in your family is safe. Your friends ain't safe.
Decapitate and kill your entire, as a message, basically. They will say, fuck
yeah.
You. I'm killing everybody in your family, and you will have to pay. And they will pay, you know. But, I mean, it's really just economics, though. If you think about it, our lives in America, and Canada are, you know, even the poorest person in the world can go to McDonald's. It's different in Mexico. It's different in South America. Like, when we're talking about the developing world, their level of hunger and their level of anger and violence, it's just different, man. It's just different. So if anybody listening now, if you want to know, you're talking about El Chapo, but if you look up El Mencho, Nemesio Oseguera Cervantes, he's 56 years old. There is a bounty of $30 million on him. So he's much more powerful in that sense than anybody, any remnants of El Chapo's. Because listen, man, once you take down, I mean, if you ever gone with your kids to Chuck E. Cheese and you can play whack-a-mole, right? You bang it down, another mole, pops up, right? There's always going to be somebody who transplants the previous supplier. Yeah, so, I mean, El Chapo's kind of history, but, like, El Mencho right now is the guy. And in probably 5 years, we'll hear hip-hop songs talking about El Mencho once the U.S. extradites him to the U.S. to face American justice, right?
Well, duh. While we're talking about the guys, we gotta because this is an equal opportunity show. We gotta talk about the girls as well, in terms of the Narco Novias. You know, like Angie,
yep.
Cesarmonte, Susana Sosatoro, Sandra Avila Beltran. You know, Adina Ariano Felix. When you
man,
see
you,
the
you,
women,
you've done your research, man, in your library time, man. You know these, yeah, man. You know you. Listen, a lot of times when the guy goes to prison, yeah, the wife takes over, and yeah, it's kind of equal opportunity, gender neutral. We've had the badass. So when El Chapo met Kate Del Castillo and Sean Penn. Kate Del Castillo, mm-hmm. a lot of people don't know. She was a star of a narco telenovela called La Reina del Sur, the Queen of the South. And she's from a prominent acting family in Mexico City. And let's be honest, El Chapo met her because he wanted to get in her pants. Like, he wanted to fuck her. But, he met with her. No, it's no... Because she's a classy girl, it would be like a dude from the hood, you know, getting a chance to meet, you know,
Beyonce,
yeah, or Meghan Markle. you like me? Yeah, you're classy, and I'm like low class, whatever. But there have been some women. Badass women, you know, narcos, they step in. A lot of the narco stuff, by the way, they cement the relationships by marriages. So it's not really the same, I think, in African-American communities. It's like, if you marry my niece, then you and I are blah, blah, blah. Like, it really is, now we're tied, and now you can't fuck me over, because, you know? So, yeah, a lot of that stuff in Mexico, it is much more like the Sicilian Mafia. It's like blood ties. You married somebody in my family. We are, yeah. And there have been a lot of powerful women in Mexico. They will definitely step in when their husbands or brothers go to prison. They'll push the button as quickly as anybody else. And by the way, man, like, I've dealt with lots of different, well, the Russians kind of scare me too, but I wouldn't fuck with that. Because word of advice, don't fuck with Mexicans. They will pull the trigger really quick. They're not loath to drop a body just to settle a score. They have a lot of pride in their culture and also honor. honor is a big thing. You know, you disrespected me, right?
Pride.
Pride, yeah.
Pride and
honor,
but
the
man.
Bible
goes
says,
hand in hand.
But the Bible said, pride goeth before the fall, right? Like, it's your downfall. It's your downfall. Like, you really should not, if you're in the drugs business, any kind of criminal activity, think about the bottom line. How much money are you making? It's not really about, did this guy disrespect me? It's about, can we still do business together? You know what I'm saying? Like, the narco business is not that different from any other organized crime. And my friends who cover this stuff in Mexico as journalists, they don't even like the word narcos. They just call it mafia. Because, I don't know if you know this, all the resorts, all the shit in Mexico, they are paying extortion, murder for hire, all the organized crime groups in Mexico that we call cartels, they engage in all the same shit as mafia in America. They'll do hits for hire. They'll do extortion. So even all the resorts that people – I've never really vacationed in Mexico, but all the resorts in Mexico, they're paying some kind of extortion to one of these groups.
And the thing about it, yeah. And the thing about it too, Doug, is that the country, you know, is the government in Mexico is basically powerless to stop it. What do you do when you're dealing with any one cartel, let alone five, who have more money than the government? You figure one cartel with their network has more money than the government. I mean, how do you fight something like that?
Not only that, it's powerless, but like at El Chapo's trial, when he was convicted in 2019, it came up that I don't think they allowed it to be admissible, that the previous president of Mexico had received, I'm not making this number up, $100 million in bribes from El Chapo to look the other way.
I believe
right.
Look,
so,
he digs out a tunnel for 2 years, a year, 2 years, and nobody hears anything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, whenever anybody asks me about that tunnel, I say a lot of people were paid a lot of fucking money to not hear the jackhammers.
Look, Doug, pluma y blanco, silver or lead, which do you want? We pay you or we kill you?
Beautiful. Dude, I'm glad you brought that up. You want the silver? Pluma pot, you want the silver or the lead? And actually, Chapo always went with silver. Bribe people.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, somebody asked me on another podcast, is El Chapo a folk hero? I said, yeah. I know Mexicans in New York. I know Mexicans. They'll say, I don't think they really got El Chapo. What do you mean? I think they have a body double. El Chapo's free. They just got it. I said, oh, you've been watching too many fucking sci-fi movies, man. Like, they got him. But, I mean, the reality is...
They cloned him.
They cloned him. But the reality is, like, if you think about it, if you're making billions, spend $100 million on bribery rather than shooting it out. It makes a lot more sense to go with silver than lead. Long term. The youngsters, these narco juniors, that's why this current Ovidio was arrested, his son, getting back to that. He was arrested back in 2019. They shot it out. He had 700 gunmen. They shot it out with 50 caliber machine guns. This time, the problem was they got him to the airport. Once you get into the airport, they can get into Mexico City. And that's why they shot up some airliners. You know, he's currently in the prison. They're saying they're not going to extradite him to the U.S., but I think they will. But Sinaloa, see, I don't like to stigmatize countries. I would liken this to... We've all seen Untouchables. Al Capone in the 1920s ran Chicago. The mayor answered to Al Capone. The police answered to Al Capone. They
even the mayor.
Yeah.
Check in.
Everybody. They all answered to organized crime. That is the state of Sinaloa. That's not all of Mexico, but in Sinaloa, where El Chapo is from, everybody is on the payroll, or either they're on the payroll or their families are afraid of getting whacked. Because if, listen,
right,
if you're in the police, all the police in Sinaloa are corrupted, partly because of money, but also partly because if you were to snitch on El Chapo, they'll kill your whole family, man. Like, it's merciless. It's not a game, man. It's a different culture down there.
It is. And when you look at it, shout out to Al Camino. I got his book, Drug Wars. One thing you notice with all the Marines, the Mexican Marines and the police, the Policia, the Marina, all their faces are covered. All their every picture I saw with the arrest of all the cartel members, the Templar Knights, you know, El Teo, all the police covered, and I'm like,
well,
Thomas,
you know why that is? Because previous to the capture of El Chapo, they weren't, and they killed the family of one of the guys. So they have to wear balaclava. They have to cover their entire face. They have to be anonymous because in that country, it's not like, I hate to say it, but like the mafia did in America have some rules. You don't kill the wife. You don't kill the kids. Nah.
Right.
In Mexico, and same with the Russian mob, by the way, they'll kill your whole family. They don't give a fuck.
Yep.
They'll kill your whole family. And so the Mexican Marines who do these cats, they have to cover their faces because, I mean, they're living in that country. And not to just Mexico, but that country is corrupt. The top, my friends who are journalists down there who are Mexican tell me the top narcos in the Mexican society are our president and our government. Like, they are the narcos. Narcos are allowed to prosper by the government. So, I mean, but getting back to it, man, like, it's not like the United States and other countries are not corrupted. But down there, it's just very brazen. It's like we paid off the president, gave him $100 million to look. Basically, they don't pay the government to participate. They say, I'll give you $100 million. And by the way, you and me and Eric, we all have car loans, right? And then they say, $100 million? I wish I had $100 million to look the other way. All they're asking the president is to look the other way. They don't want the government of Mexico to participate in narco trafficking. They just want them to look the other way. Like, don't fuck with my business. And that's the Plato and Pluma. So, silver or lead, the silver in Mexico is basically pay the government to have a blind eye. Don't ask too many questions, and you'll get yours. My parents are from Chicago. I don't know if you guys know, like, Chicago was the most corrupted city in the United States. I'll tell you a really quick personal funny story. My dad, remember getting a driver's license? You had to go write a test, and you had to take a driver's test, all that shit. My dad, in 1940, whatever, he said, I got my driver's license the Chicago way. And I said, what do you mean? We went down to the precinct. There was a certain captain. We bribed him with some neckties and whatever. What, you never wrote a test? Nah. In Chicago, you just paid off. That's how it – Chicago. And so my dad was really funny about this shit because he was born in Chicago. He said, Chicago's motto, the motto of Chicago is the city that works. But my dad said, the real motto of Chicago should be, where's mine? Like, give me my piece of the act. Where's mine? Yeah. So, like, when I look at Mexico, I look at this shit and I go, you wanna judge Sinaloa? Look back to Chicago in the 30s and 40s. Like, I had an uncle in Chicago who had a liquor store. It burned to the fucking ground. Like, a liquor store on the west side. Now, west side of Chicago is really violent, right? He used to be Jewish.
Right.
My Uncle Abe, he said, my liquor store burned to the ground. I said, what happened? He goes, I didn't make the payoff. I said, what do you mean? The cops wanted the payoff. I forgot to make the payoff, and they burned the fuck. That's
damn.
Chicago. I'm serious. Like, America has no business judging Mexico. Or America is the most gangster nation in the history of the world.
He was still doing it.
But I mean, look, Doug, when you're looking at how it comes, it's about, you know, que bono, who profits, you know, quid pro quo.
Yep.
You know, you scratch my back,
yep,
I scratch yours. So it's always, whenever you're dealing with people in high power and positions, there's always going to be corruptness. It's just about to the level of corruptness. When you watch that 1987 film, The Untouchables, Sean Connery, Robert De Niro, all of them. I mean, the movie was absolutely on point. You know, it was just
yep.
because when they talk about it, you're seeing about when with Sean Connery's character, what was his name? I'm forgetting his character's name, but he was like, you don't go to the, he's like, you don't go where the apple's at. You got to go to the tree first. Malone, that was his character name, Malone. And
Malone
was telling
them,
you got to go to the, you got to go to the tree. You got to go where the actual tree is grown, which is the, you know, academy. Because you, by the time you already got the cop.
That's a perfect analogy, because the vast majority of Americans back in 1928, 29, 30, wanted alcohol. And Capone was supplying it. And, you know, so these prohibition officers who were trying to bust it, I mean, the vast majority of people didn't want to fucking not have speakeasies and bars where they could go get a glass of beer. I mean, it was insane.
Right.
So it's kind of the same. The prohibition against drugs is the same thing. I think we should legalize marijuana. I'm on the fence. I don't know what to do about cocaine and heroin. You can't really legalize that shit. I mean, what do you guys think? Like, if you legalize cocaine, I mean, dispensaries and weed being legal, I don't see it. Like, look at Snoop, and I mean, I've never seen Mike Tyson more articulate and pleasant now that he's a pothead. He used to be an psychotic maniac. Like, you know, when I watch Mike talking now that he's a pothead, he used to be the scariest, most psychotic, and we knew he was on cocaine. Now that Mike is a pothead, he's so philosophical and, I mean, but what do we do with, like, harder drugs like cocaine and heroin? Like, I don't think we can really legalize them without supervision. I don't know.
Well,
but, like,
we could, I mean, because you can do anything. But the thing is it a smart thing that you should do? When you're looking, weed has never killed anybody. Synthetic weed, absolutely. It's killed a few people. Because it's lab created, but natural weed, the earth lettuce, it has never killed anybody. So they had to look at it from a perspective of what was already being done in abundance, and was there any real collateral damage? Nobody's ever gone out on a mass shooting spree because they smoked too much weed. They would have been too tired and they would have been too relaxed. Cocaine. When you're looking at cocaine and heroin, cocaine is a stimulant. Cocaine actually back in the 20s and 30s used to be used in terms of as a medicinal.
Your listeners should Google Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud, the father of psychotherapy, thought cocaine was the miracle cure And he was an addict to cocaine.
Yeah, he was.
Freud thought cocaine was the miracle drug for depression. It is for 20 minutes.
Yeah, that high.
And then,
it's so
and then it wears off. Yeah.
But what they say about it, Doug, when you're talking to drug addicts, the first hit is too much, and after that, it's never enough. You know, one hit is too much in the first, because you're chasing that high. When you're looking at what happened even with weed back today with Henry J. Asinger, how they outlaw weed, what did he say? It was going to make the white women love the black men. It was going to cause all types of racial. that's really how they banned weed. They were saying they would bring about all these illicit actions. I mean, so it was always about, and the drug culture and the drink culture was just wild. I mean, we look at the speakeasies, which was about speakeasy because of the, the illegal brothels. I mean, we look at prostitution. I'm going to take it a step further, y'all. Pornography, which I have no issue with, because porn wasn't legalized until 1988. But back in the day, there were so many laws for, like, it was actually – you know, that's why they cost so much back in the 80s to get. Like, you had to be plugged in back in the day to get the flicks. Like, they would cost, like, $100 a tape because
I remember guys in my dad's generation, blue movies. They would have, like, these little, And I'm trying to tell my daughter, now that my daughter is 20 and she's going, like, you know, my daughter knows about Pornhub. I said, listen, man. And she laughs about Pee Wee Herman jerking off in a – I said, yeah, I got to say something. There wasn't porn everywhere. You could buy Playboy and Penthouse, but porn was not ubiquitous the way for your generation. And by the way, it's not just porn. Instagram is pretty much porn now to me. these video vixens and these Instagram models or whatever they call them, I'm like, okay, it's at the point now where – there is no need for porn because Instagram is providing. Yeah, but if you go really back, man, like I'm glad you're such a historian because pot was a big deal back in the day. But even Cab Calloway in the 20s would talk about cocaine. I mean, cocaine, these drugs have been around forever.
Right.
It's just a question of what level do we allow it to become abusive and addictive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, you know, we are the people that want it. People want to get high. Canada legalized pot across the board. I think the U.S. will do it really soon. I mean, I was just reading about New York. Like, there's parts of Times Square, it's not legal, but there's basically open dispensaries where everybody can smoke weed at some point, because Canada legalized it like 2-3 years ago. The U.S. would just say, fuck, go anywhere you want and buy pot. Like, it's not going to hurt anybody. It's no different than buying a bottle of beer. But I'm not really sure what to do about marijuana and, I'm sorry, about cocaine and heroin, because heroin will kill you. And cocaine.
Yeah. But you got to look at what people would do to feed that addiction. I mean, in terms of, I mean, you've seen people go on these coke benders and, like, do crazy shit. I mean, it's something that is so lethal, just like heroin. Like I said, what the addicts will do to get it. Obviously, you know, you got people that have been robbed and killed behind this stuff. So it is dilemma in all seriousness, but like you said, we are not naive to people's wants and desires, which is, if motherfuckers want it bad enough, guess what, they're gonna get it.
Right. So me, it's not even a question of it's not a public health thing, it's almost education. Like, I mean, I love the Beatles. I grew up listening to the Beatles, and the Beatles did LSD, pot, every drug you can imagine, and actually recorded Sgt. Pepper on, they were getting pharmaceutical grade cocaine from Switzerland. And I remember reading this interview with John Lennon where he said, yeah, we did cocaine a lot, but it's a stupid drug. Because after 20 minutes, you just want more. Like with pot, 2-3 hours is good. LSD, 24 hours. So, I mean,
yeah.
I think we have to, in a way, we almost have to demystify it for people and, like, stop the overdoses, stop the people, you know, just taking too much of this shit. I mean, we're getting a little bit off El Chapo, but, like, El Chapo liked his, he smoked weed. He didn't like coke. And El Chapo liked tequila and beer. No, actually, not tequila. He liked, it's really funny.
Corona?
He liked the beer called Pacifico, but when he was interacting with Keita Castillo, so Keita Castillo is a very classy woman from a high-end acting family in New Mexico City, and she started to tweet, "Oh, El Chapo, if you use your power for good," so on. Now, like, he's a campesino, a farmer with no education, and she comes from a classy family, so he just wants to get in her pants. And, like, she is, I mean, the truth is, so she said something, like, she wanted him to invest in her tequila company. So, by the way, tequila companies are a great way to money launder. So a lot of the various artisanal tequilas are fronts for organized crime as well. But anyway, so Chapo says in one tweet to her, "I don't drink much tequila, but I like," he says, "Bucana." And I was like, what the fuck? So Buchanan's is a scotch, but it's popular in Latin America. And he literally typed it in his iPhone, Bukana, Bucana. And I was like, what the fuck is it? Oh, Buchanan's. I mean, people are going to want these illicit substances no matter what we do to try to dissuade them. And I almost think we have to just, I don't think we can legalize everything, but we have to almost educate people and say, listen, man,
right?
You do a bunch of cocaine, you're going to end up a broke motherfucker, you know, having, you do a bunch of pot, you're going to end up a guy sitting on a sofa. Yeah, a stoner. Do a bunch of alcohol, you're going to end up blah, 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 with drunk driving charges. I almost think everything should be legal with serious educational. And then, you know what? These cartels wouldn't exist. Because they're really just, if you look at the cartels of Medellin or Sinaloa, whatever, they are the pharmaceutical companies illicitly of, like, Roche Pharmaceuticals or Purdue or whatever. They are providing a substance to the consumer of North America, because let's be honest, most people in Mexico or, you know, Peru can't afford this shit. And by the way, if people don't know, coca is a leaf, right? My brother and his kids went to Peru, and the Incas would chew this leaf. It's almost like having a cup of coffee. It helps with altitude. They would chew this leaf to climb up this mountain to get to Machu Picchu, whatever. But, I mean, like, all these things kind of exist in nature. But if we demystified them for kids and said, listen, man, you want to do a bunch of coke? Fine. You want to end up broke and looking like Whitney Houston at the end of her life and throwing away an amazing career because of an addiction, then. But I don't, you know, I mean, the problem is, like, law enforcement will never agree to that, so. I mean, I don't know if you both of you have kids, but, like, with my daughter, like, I smoke weed in front of her. And then she says shit like, is that marijuana? It smells like, oh my God, it smells, is that the worst smell I've ever? Like, demystify this shit for people, and then they won't want.
Right.
Like, I've actually noticed with the younger, the younger generation don't really want to get high. Like, they're not, I'm talking 18, 19, 20-year-olds. They're not as into drugs as my generation was.
Right.
I think probably they've seen the downside. I mean,
yeah.
Eric, tell
yeah.
me the truth.
Seen
like,
a lot of their favorites go out, man. They've seen guys like
Juice
a
World.
Lot of these rappers, SoundCloud rappers, you know, they thought they had next or built a decent following. They end up getting taken out by it. Should even see it with DMX.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Gangsta Boo. Gangsta Boo, rest in peace. Yeah.
Yeah, I
you
mean,
know,
that cocaine is a drug. Probably shouldn't say this on the air, but now I'm having a vodka, speaking of drugs. But, like, yeah, vodka.
It's all good.
I had about 3 years where I was, like, I had these Israeli friends in New York. And, man, I'm not talking about, I mean, we were partying, going to nightclubs, and it was great. But, like, I wish I had that money back. I mean,
right.
It was wasted time.
Right.
Like, all that blow, it was just wasted money. You know, you're not really achieving anything. I wish I put that into something. Somebody asked me, like, have you done cocaine? I said, I have probably put a Lexus up my nose.
Oh. Oh.
Well, maybe not. Oh, whatever. An Infinity. I mean, seriously, like, over the years, at least in New York, to get a good, so the grams in New York when I was partying was $30 a gram, but if you wanted the pure shit, it was like $100 a gram. Before you knew it, $500 a
yeah.
week on coke?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people do that shit, right? You add
yep.
that up, wow. Wow, it's like, and I mean, I know a lot of people that still do cocaine, and I look at them and I say, is it really worth it, man? Is the juice worth the squeeze? Seriously, are you having that much fun? Are you having that much fun? Is the juice worth the squeeze? At the end of the day, look at your fucking bank balance after you've done a binge of cocaine. But,
and they're still talking about, well, I'm depressed, and they make their M.O. music and stuff. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
In the damn bank.
Very true. I mean, but, you know, God bless Snoop for making weed his, because I actually, Bob Marley, I knew this from when I was a teenager. Weed is harmless. I mean, at the end of the day, you get high on weed. The worst you're going to do is be slow and stupid and possibly spend 3 hours mopping your kitchen. Like, that's what – if I smoke some weed, I will spend 3 hours mopping my kitchen. And I will go, why did I do that? Oh, yeah, like, I was high. Like Afro Man said,
because I got high.
Cocaine will make you think you can fight Mike Tyson. And I mean, thank God I never tried heroin, but I mean, like, those drugs, man. But I think at some point we have to demystify them for the kids, for our younger generation, to at least getting back to El Chapo. And, you know, why are these guys so powerful? Because so many people want to get fucked up. I mean, in our cultures, in America, Canada, Europe, so many people want to party. Methamphetamine, Molly, we can name them all off, like party drugs.
Yeah.
And they're not legal.
So that's
okay,
the Hollywood lifestyle. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, having rambled forever, like, any other questions about these cartels? I mean, the cartels, I don't even like that word. It's just mafia, Mexico, like, so these cartels, we call them, Sinaloa, the Zetas, whatever. they also engage in murder for hire, extortion. So it's really the same mafia shit. Organized crime is organized crime. It is.
Right.
I you know, for whatever reason, if you're brown and you have a Latin name, you're a narco. If you're white and you have an Italian name, you're a gangster. Same shit. Like, Lucky Luciano was one of the biggest heroin importers. Meyer Lansky, Jewish guy. I mean, the mythology you heard in The Godfather, oh, I won't touch drugs. The Italian mafia, the Jewish mafia, they always imported heroin. It was their bread and butter. I mean, organized crime will make a buck wherever they see a way to make a buck. There is no way. I don't know if, you know, people saw too many, you know, things like The Godfather. They think the mafia never turned their nose up at heroin, man. Like, the heroin back in the day came from Turkey. And it would come from Turkey into Sicily, Corsica, the French Connection. There was a huge case in New York in the 80s, the Pizza Connection.
Yeah.
Most of the heroin flooding Harlem, Bed-Stuy, was Sicilians bringing that shit in and poisoning, you know, black and Latin communities. So the idea that, like, oh, the mafia didn't deal with drugs. They had one rule, don't get caught. Don't get caught dealing in drugs, because back in the day in the mafia, like, okay, you got caught, like, running up numbers operation, 3 years. Gambling, 3 years. Heroin trafficking, 100 years. So everybody started to snitch, right? So that's why, like, in Gotti's era, Gotti and his crew were, you know, they were heroin trafficking, cocaine, everything. But, like, the rule in the mafia was basically don't get caught, because
right.
They were never moralistically not doing it. They were just saying, you know, the sentencing that came with drug trafficking was far different from running a gambling operation. You could get out after 3 years. Like, somebody asked me, what's Chapa doing? I said, he's doing 400 years plus. It's like they're burying, like, he will never leave that prison in Colorado. When you get
no.
that kind of time, most normal humans, when they get 100 years, start talking. If you get 3 years to 5 years, and I've dealt with this with African-Americans, Jamaicans, Italians, 3 to 5 years, I can do that time. 100 years, what do you want to know? Sick, 100 years. I want to come home and see my grandchildren at some point. Yeah, El Chapo's sentence, if you want to know, is 400 years plus. I mean, that guy is dying in Colorado. There's a photo of him when they finally put him on the helicopter to bring him out of Juarez, Mexico. And that motherfucker looks scared. Like, the look in his eyes. Like,
he knew
knows,
he wasn't going to be able to bribe his way out of it.
And he knew, I'm never coming back to my country. I've never seen my kids. I've never seen my wife. It's not that, and by the way, it's not that Americans can't be bribed. But just think about it. He had to bribe certain people to get, you know, to tunnel out of Altiplano prison with that motorcycle. It probably cost him millions. I would say tens of millions. He's in Florence, Colorado, ADX. You would have to bribe people to the tune of billions and put people on hidden islands. Like, think about it. Like, would you, Eric, would you or Tom, would you throw your life away for $100,000? You'd be like, good money, but no, man, I want to. Usually it has to be like $10 billion. The amount of money you'd have to bribe people in the United States to do something that crazy. It's So that's right. why, like,
right.
But honestly, like, somebody asked me on another podcast, is El Chapo a folk hero? I said, oh, yeah, man. I meet Mexicans and Peruvians in New York, and they say, they don't have El Chapo. I said, what do you mean? I think it's a body double. Like, he's free. They just got a guy that looks like him. I'm pretty sure they got the guy. But, like,
Doug,
I don't want to believe he's still...
Doug, this is folk hero shit. When I read the story about El Chapo years ago, I think it was in, once it was in Juarez, Mexico. So he goes into a restaurant, pulls up a chair, his gunmen are outside,
yeah.
They lock the door. And he just sits in the restaurant for like 3 hours, just eating his food and talking to the people. And then pays for everybody's food when he leaves. And nothing
yeah.
happens. Like, there was no, he just wanted to chill. And pay for
That's a very big. That's a very famous story, but I'm pretty sure it didn't happen because it's been told, like, that he went into a restaurant in Mexico City and he said, everybody give up your cell phones. I just want
right,
to eat.
Right,
I mean,
part of it as well. Right, right.
Yeah, it's like these stories we hear about. So the guy that I think, I mean, you guys are too young maybe, but, like, Al Capone is legendary, but I think the guy that's most comparable to El Chapo is John Dillinger. John Dillinger
yeah.
was a gunman, a bank robber, but he also escaped multiple times from prisons. One time
yeah, the infamous wooden gun trick.
Yeah, you know that shit, man. So I think people love that. To me, I mean, just being a writer, I love stories about Robin Hood figures, but also the fact that you would break out of prison. Like, dude, that's badass. So El Chapo twice broke out of prison. I'm going to tell you the truth. He broke out of prisons because he bribed the right people to look the other way.
Right.
But, yeah, that – I mean, I was listening to The Game and Skrillex, you know. I'm El Chapo, you know, motorcycle out these cells, these motherfuckers. Use the N-word. I was like, yeah, dude, that, to make a tunnel into a maximum security prison and have a souped-up motorcycle, that is some legendary shit. The fact that he got recaptured, it doesn't really matter almost, but, like, John Dillinger did that multiple times. Like, he was captured, most wanted man in America, broke out. He carved a gun out of soap or wood. People love the idea of the outlaw. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know, man. You guys, both of you guys are African American. Don't you think that the outlaw in the hood, for want of a better word, the outlaw, the guy that
yeah.
nobody can catch. That's an intoxicating idea, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, Doug, even in the United States, we had a show called The Dukes of Hazzard, you know, about the Georgia, the hillbillies in Georgia. And
I remember.
They made moonshine. And we, Daisy Duke, and they are, look, they are adopted in the hood. You know, rest in peace.
Really?
You know, Uncle Jesse. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We love The Dukes of
no
Hazzard.
No way.
Bo and Luke Duke. Daisy Duke, rest in peace, Uncle Jesse. Rest in peace, Roscoe and Thurl Burke. I mean, James Best and Thurl Burke, you know, Roscoe P. Coltrane and Boss Hogg. That show was heavy in the hood. We love the Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, really? Okay, so I'm going way back. Before porn, we didn't have, but it was like that word, Daisy Dukes. Like,
yeah.
There was a chick.
Catherine
there was
Fox.
A chick on
yeah,
network
was,
TV wearing, like, little shorts. Cut off jean
yeah,
shorts.
That's where it came from. Daisy Duke, Catherine Bach.
Yeah.
She was rocking them. Yeah. I mean, but
and,
they, that was
and
that
by the way,
show.
Americans don't even realize that whole that culture that they were showing, like NASCAR, which is so redneck. But NASCAR comes from the souped up bootleggers, you know, back in the hills of
right.
West Virginia. North
yeah.
Carolina.
They were running.
I mean,
yeah,
they would outrun the revenue agents because they had moonshine. So, yeah, NASCAR, I mean, NASCAR is as American as it gets, right? Like, and I don't watch that shit. I'd rather watch Formula One because I like I like seeing
American
is
a kiss.
Monte Carlo. Yeah, but NASCAR, like, dude, that shit comes from bootlegging. It comes from the days of the revenue agents chasing the moonshiners. So, yeah, we're getting right back to the heart of the matter here, which is illicit substances and how in demand they are, but also how the people that purvey them are idolized in a way, you know? Whether it's a moonshiner, it's a cocaine dealer, it's a pot dealer, it's, you know, we've mythologized these guys, but at the end of the day, it's like they're giving people something they want. Like, nobody really mythologizes a serial killer or a child molester or whatever. Like, these are those are scumbags. Like, does anybody really mythologize Ted Bundy or these guys? But they mythologize. No. They mythologize John Gotti. They mythologize John Dillinger. They mythologize Escobar, El Chapo. You know why? Because what was he doing? At the end of the day, he was giving people what they really wanted and the government wouldn't give it to them. Right?
Right.
And by the way, I got to say something that maybe you don't know that, or, I mean, Tom, you know this. Like, Escobar was well-loved in Medellin because he, like, he founded a soccer team, you know, in this region, in the region of Sinaloa where El Chapo's from. He built schools and community centers and shit that the corrupt government of Mexico City wasn't building. So if you think that the people of La Tuna, Badurella, that these areas that he's from would ever give him up, when El Chapo used his drug money to provide more services than the actual government, why would people snitch on him?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, and there's video of when they killed Escobar, this amazing video in Medellin, of some women screaming, "What are we going to do now? You know, Pablo, you're dead. Pablo, you gave us everything." Because these are countries where the government didn't give the poor people shit. They didn't give them education. They didn't give them recreational. They didn't give them. And the drug dealers provided that stuff. You might say it's calculating. Okay, of course they did it to protect themselves. But, yeah, it's a bit of the rock. You know, Tom, don't you think it's a bit of the Robin Hood mythology, right? Like, Robin Hood, steal from the rich, give to the poor. Like, who doesn't love that story? Robin Hood is like a classic. It's like, I took from the rich and they gave it to the poor. That's the way.
And gave it to the poor in abundance. I mean, when you're talking about the money that those guys had, the sense of charity that a lot of them had, I mean, we just can't overlook it. Their sense of charity to their fellow man was unbelievable in terms of the stuff they did for their people. It doesn't 100%. Mean they wanted the shit. Yeah, it doesn't mean it, but it doesn't
mean.
Yeah,
I mean, they were making their money illegally.
Somebody tried to come in.
Were they doing it out of charity or are they doing it as self-protection? I don't know. But at the end of the
probably
day.
A little bit of both.
A little bit of both. I mean, I've traveled the world enough. Like, you know, Jamaica has these garrison constituencies down in Tivoli Gardens, and you know it's the same thing. These dons, like you hear Super Cat, these guys talking about, you know what they do when their party wins the election? These gunmen, and then they provide jobs for the community. So at the end of the day, it's kind of like it's a nexus between government and criminals. And in some societies, the criminals are the government.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't know if that makes sense. The criminals kind of provide what the government should have provided, right?
Right. Which gives them the power by default.
Oh, my God. They're beloved, man. They're beloved, and they're also the supporters of the – but also they came from that class, right? You came from the sufferer's class. You came from the, you know, I don't know. What's the best example in Black American culture? Thinking about Big Meech, I'm thinking about Big Meech was like a fucking big deal, right? Like, There are examples of guys who really made a lot of money and became kind of folk heroes. I'm not talking Bumpy Johnson, like more recently, Nicky Barnes, but like, you know, you made a lot of money from drugs, but you also help people.
I mean, those guys, so they did so, I mean, but you have a lot. I mean, you had a lot of people that were really, I mean, Nietzsche, they said Nietzsche in terms of his operation, he looked out for everybody. You know, it's so much layers. We see his story. Shout out to 50 Cent, of course, for doing the show to really kind of tell that story. Shout out to the people of BMF that we know, you know, that follow us. You know, we rock with some of them. They rock with us. You know, so we
okay. Well, shout out to BMF because I don't want to get I never want to on the wrong end of BMF. But
nah,
shout out to those guys.
Yeah. They're good.
Black
they're
Mafia
good
family.
Yeah. Shout out to BMF Cash. You know Sosa. All those guys, they're good friends of ours. So it's just definitely something that we got a lot of. And the thing is, ultimately, there's always going to be that for what those guys go through and sometimes survive, because we got to keep it real, some don't. But when we see those stories, I think that's what makes it all the more intriguing. And damn, we are like running over time, and we do not want Blog Talk kicking us off and such insightful,
okay,
intelligent.
So listen, man. We will do another episode about Split Decision and Spike and
absolutely
Ice
absolutely.
And the Crips.
And then we're going to do one about the last boss of Brighton because,
oh,
man. My...
Didn't we do that one already? I have no idea.
No, we have not done that yet, and we need to get into that one too. I mean, Doug.
Yeah, but Eric,
you are
Eric,
always,
man, King Eric. You're always quiet. Like, is it because you're in the background?
I'm never that quiet. Cause sometimes I'm like, y'all getting so much dope content, I gotta be quiet for the team so I could get that content printed in. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I don't want to interrupt.
Okay,
whoa.
Okay, there you go. Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? Like, Karis once said, "Bad boys move in silence, man." Like, you gotta be. Sometimes the quiet dude is the dude you gotta. Yeah. But man, let's do another.
Because T-Max will tell you, I yap all day, but when it comes to interviewers and letting the guests get their stories and get a lot of enlightening content, sometimes you got to be quiet because you never know when a good story going to slip up and you got to get that, you know?
Definitely.
Listen, brother, as a journalist, I've sat with so many dudes and, like, man, I let my tape recorder run or whatever, and, like, it's 3 minutes, it's 3 hours in, and then we hit some fucking gem, some jewel. But yeah, you're right. People have to relax. But by the way, yeah, like you guys, T-Max, like you guys know your shit. I'm so glad to be part of your team. And if you want to do
absolutely
another one on,
we're saying yes before you even ask. Yes.
But
another one's definitely going to be on the house.
But Ice and Spike, Split Decision, that's organized crime as well. It's just about the Crips in L.A. and the jewel thieves. Like, I mean, it's not gang banging as much as the players. The players who are making hundreds of thousands of dollars. But both Ice and Spike are Crips. Like, Ice is from Rolling 60s. He doesn't like to admit. He doesn't like. Ice is very careful not to really
talk about that.
Rolling
we know.
30s.
We know.
Yeah, yeah. But like, because Ice went to school with like Hoovers, and you know, the more he shouts out one group, he makes enemies of another. So, but yeah, technically his affiliation. Yeah, like Big U. Big. Let me ask you advice. Big U wants me to write his book. Big U is a legend, Eugene Henley.
Yep.
But I'm like, man, do people want to hear more Crip stories? I'm not sure.
Man,
just write a story.
It's really, you know what it is? It's really the podcast era. It's like the new street DVDs.
Yep. Yep.
And it's just that a lot of these guys that are alive, they figure, hey, we got to monetize this shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I mean, the Big U, like, I mean, I talked to him like, I don't know, 5-6 times. This dude, I mean, they had a war with Monster Cody and the Hatred Gangsters. And he's a he's not like Ice-T who transitioned to music. Big U is a gangster. And he was a gangster.
Yeah.
And he was a good street fighter and all that shit. But, yeah, like,
Big U,
people think he's fast.
I tell everybody, do not test Big U in the streets with them hands. He is a black belt. A lot of people don't know that. I'm giving y'all fair warning.
Yeah.
You is a black belt. Do not test that man.
Yeah, so I'm I've been working on doing his autobiography because, like, dude, he got expelled from L.A. to go to Chicago or Detroit. I think I can't remember. Like, dude, he was literally, like, kicked out of Los Angeles. But, like, yeah, rolling 60s, Big U's pretty humble about some shit, but he was like, dude, if I was on the street when Suge was coming up, that shit never would have happened. Like, Big U kind of runs a lot of shit in L.A. So,
yeah,
I mean, these things, people, in my estimation, people love these street stories because you, me, Eric, we all just more or less follow the rules, man. We pay our taxes. We do this shit. We love
We're
these stories
billions.
About guys who... yeah, right. We love these stories about guys who say, fuck it. Fuck you, cop. Fuck you, whatever. Fuck the system. We all kind of wish we could do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know what? At the end of the day, last word I'm going to say is I've dealt with Italians, Jamaicans, Russians. At the end of the day, the guy that has the most power is the guy that doesn't give a fuck about doing time. Like,
That's
I've
true.
Known guys, and they're like, I'm going to go do 10 years. Fuck you. I mean, I couldn't do it. I don't know about you guys. I've known a few guys who were like, yo, dude, I already did a bunch of time. Like, if you are ready to go to a prison for 10 years and you don't give a fuck, that's a powerful dude in the streets because it means you are feared. And I'm not admiring it, but that's, at the end of the day, it's a commonality to Italian mafia, Jamaicans, Black American gangsters, narco traffickers. It's like, if you can go do a bunch of time, you got some juice. You got some power. Because
but
that
what
means you're...
What did they say? Yeah, but what did my man say in The Usual Suspects about Kaiser Soze? You know, about it's about you're willing to do what the other guy won't.
Yep. Well, yeah, but, like, I mean, dude, I care about my... I care about my daughter. I care about my mother. Most of the gangsters I've got to know, and I've known a few, they are narcissistic. They never got the fucking gene for delayed gratification. They want it now. They want
right.
their record. I'm no gangster, but I've known a bunch of them, and I understand the way they think. They want it now. They don't want to wait. And they also want you to know that they were the guy that did that shit to you. So,
right.
I mean, I'm no gangster, but yeah. But you know what? At the end of the day, I like the last thing I want to say to your listeners, like, dude, it's no different. The Mexicans, Jamaicans, Italians, Russians, they're all, it's all mafia. Call it a cartel, call it a mafia. It's all the same shit. It's profiting off of what other people want there's no difference, right, Eric? Like, dude.
At the end of the day, it's all a part of the underworld.
Underworld. Thank you, Eric. Groove.
Part
dude,
of the underworld,
said,
man. If your survival
Eric says very little, but when he does, it's the underworld. If you're part of the underworld, you cannot also be up in the upper world. Don't expect to be in the underworld extorting people, running all kinds of shit, and also having legit businesses and being on TV. You know, when I see Cardi B and Tekashi 6ix9ine saying, I'm a blood, I'm like, dude, you're not a blood. Sorry. You might, like Big U said, I think they went to the store and bought a flag. Like, that, they didn't pay their dudes, like, in our neighborhood to do that, to be claiming those affiliations, right?
Right.
Yeah, they're giving. Yeah, just like I told T-Max a long time ago, they're giving out red rags like NWO shirts.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays it's just a badge of honor, but, like, talk to Ice-T or Spike. These guys, it's like, man, it's the neighbor. You doesn't matter. You were born into that neighborhood. I was born into the 30s. Dirty 30s, Roland 30s, Rich Roland 30s. Like, in L.A., that shit was in your blood.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mafia family, it's a little bit different because it's a little bit more, you know, generational, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, man, I hope this little episode has demystified a bit of narco. Narco shit is the same as any other organized crime drug dealing is. It's the same. Let's make some money. Let's take advantage of the system. Let's beat the feds. It's not more glamorous. The only reason El Chapo is a legend is because he bribed the right people to tunnel out of a prison. He could not tunnel out of that prison if he hadn't bribed the right people.
That's true.
It's like, who do you pay off to get away with your illicit activities? But I'm going to, by the way, thanks for this episode. I'm going to listen to Gucci Mane. I had no idea he had a song about El Chapo. I mean, El Chapo seems to have become like a folk hero to
the hood loves Chapo.
Culture.
That's all we can say. we ride with Chapo. And before, we still got to get the signed books from you. We got to get the signed books. You are too great an author. We got to get the signed books. You got my address.
No, I'm going to be in New York in about 2 weeks. Oh, but listen, man, T-Max, like, dude, seriously, were you a pimp? Did you have girls on the stroke? Like, dude, you're like, you are such a sweet talker. I'll be in New York in 2 weeks. Whatever book you want.
You wrote. Every single book you wrote, you have my address. Send them to me. Dude, this is an honor. Not many talk shows, the way we've done it, building this off-the-cuff radio from the ground up, can say that we've had a New York Times Ivy League educated, excellent, articulated, academic, savant, of a scholar on all things narco and hip-hop on our show, and we've had him twice, and we're going to have him many more than that. Douglas, you are dynamite with the TNT of thought, exploding with all types of positive energy and education for the masters. Doug, thank you again so much. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys for having me, and next time we do it, we'll talk about maybe the Crips and Ice-T in L.A., but I so much appreciate you guys giving me the time, and we'll chop it up next time.
Tell ISIS Spike if they find it. Tell them we want them to stop in too. We want to get all y'all in to talk about this. They got time. Tell them we would love.
Well, Spike's got nothing but time, but ICE is doing Geico commercials and fucking.
We know.
Dude. If I could get
Ice. Hey, have Spike on the show with us. We would love to have you and Spike come on the show to talk about it.
But, like, listen, man, Ice is about that cheddar, man. Like, Ice doesn't do shit. Like he said, you know, if it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense. If Ice isn't making money out of shit, he's like, why would I do that? But, you know, Spike, I can get. But, yeah, I can get Spike to talk anytime, man. I just, if you want to do it, let's do it in the next, January? Let's do it in February. I'll ask Spike, do you want to come on and talk about your life? I mean, dude, this dude did 35 to life, and he got out after 26. Yeah. Like, his stories are crazy.
Yeah,
so,
that's why we want him.
All right, brother. I'll ask. All right, I'll tell Spike, come on, man, and I'll just shut the fuck up, which is unusual for me, and let Spike tell him, man, dude, he has some stories that I couldn't put in the book because they were too violent or crazy. So, guys, man, listen, I'm sure we'll be in touch on social media, but
absolutely,
hopefully before that.
Absolutely,
right,
does. You know how to reach us,
King Eric.
Yes, anything. Yes. Doug, anything you need from us? Yes, man. Thank you.
I mean, no worries, man. Anytime you want to talk about anything, just as long as they got a free hour or two, you guys are your knowledge, your educational level, and you're putting the research on this shit. So it's not like we're just talking about, you know, shooting the shit. This is a high level conversation, so I appreciate doing this.
This is a master class in podcasting. Wow. Everybody take notes.
Master class. There you go. All right, man. I'll see you guys. See you guys on Instagram.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thanks again, Doug. Yeah.
All right, brother. Eric, T Mac. Peace out.
All right.
Thank
appreciate
you, again,
you, man.
Doug. King, take us out of here, brother.
All right. On that note, we up out of here. Catch us tomorrow night. Same off the cuff radio time. Same off the cuff radio channel. You heard?
Peace. God bless. We out.